This is Dave Crippen, and this is June 17th. We are conducting one of our design history interviews for the Design History Center of the Edison Institute in Ann Arbor. And today we are talking with Mr. Holden N. Bob Cotto, who is a well-known automotive designer who is in Ann Arbor to visit his son and daughter-in-law. We will ask Mr. Cotto to give us his career narrative at his own pace, his own way.
I was born in Beloit, Wisconsin in 1910, February 27th. I came from a fairly well-to-do family. My dad was always interested in cars, and he had always one big car and one business car, and I suppose that got me interested in cars.
What kind of cars did he like?
He had a big sedans for the family sedan, and then a coupe for himself. We had a Cole Aereo 8 was one of his favorites. He had one of those and two Peerlesses and a Pierce Arrow. And so I was always interested in automobiles. My books had little sketches of cars in them. And in last days of high school, I had made samples, or at least I and a model. I had a little model made out of tin and plaster and different things, but it wasn't to scale, and my drawings weren't to scale either. I thought that was up to the engineers or something, somebody else. I was just interested in the ideas. Mm-hmm. And I took my samples, drawings, and the model, which was very crude, to Detroit, and we had a friend that I visited, stayed with, that knew somebody at Briggs Manufacturing Company. And he called this person up, and I forget his name now, but it was through Al Prance and then Ralph Roberts. And Roberts saw my sketches and the model. He was rather impressed with the model, with one of the ideas, especially in the back end. And he wanted to try this out on a quarter size model, but he said he couldn't hire me then. He said our staff is too big as it was, and that but he'd give me a chance for a month. I was going to work out this idea in the scale model, and I'd get some experience. I had a desk, and I did a little sketching, which was very poor compared with the rest of them. Phil Wright, who was a well-known designer, sat right behind me. Wright, Phil Wright. Mm-hmm. And he helped me out a lot. And then there was a man in the modeling department, Joe Thompson, who took an interest in me, and he helped me out in the modeling end of it.
Before you get to your tenure there, what was Briggs at this time? How come they had a design?
Well, department? You see, Briggs built bodies for Chrysler and Ford, mm-hmm. and they also made stampings for many other cars. Mm-hmm. So they had sort of a goodwill department, I guess you might call it, where they had a chief designer, Ralph Roberts, and another chief designer sharing the same office. The studios were opposite each other.
Remember his name?
John Jarda?
John Jarda. T-J-A-R-D-A.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about
and, but I worked for Ralph Roberts.
Okay.
And Jarda's was more experimental work. He did rear engine jobs, and he had the Briggs Beauty Wear. See, they did some plumbing work too.
Oh, yeah.
And
he designed that as well.
He designed that, and they had quite an elaborate setup there where they made samples of bathrooms and stuff like that. I wasn't in on any of that. I just worked for Roberts.
That had really been their one of their main lines, had it not?
Yes, it was one of their main lines. Well, I don't know if it was more important than the bodies. I don't think it was.
But apparently someone had developed that along with the body.
Yeah.
The
So the work was very diversified. We had many different companies to work for.
Mm-hmm.
Not only the Ford and the Chrysler. See, Ford and Chrysler didn't have much of a design department. They may have had just a few people, but they relied more upon Briggs and also Murray Body. That's another company that did bodies for.
In Detroit. What year was this?
This was in 1933. I started in Briggs in August 1933, and then I left in October 1938.
So you had four good years.
Yeah. They were fun years. And
so you're coming along, and you're a fledgling designer, and people are helping you. What happened then?
Well, I had sort of a free hand. I worked out my own programs. I thought that the car should, the Lincoln, well, they didn't have a Lincoln. Yes, it did. Sure, of course, they had a big Lincoln. But I worked out interchangeability between different models, but a different way than they did in those days. They usually had a longer hood for the bigger car, and I thought it should be move the rear wheel back and make more room and more trunk room or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and do it that way, which was a lot more sensible, I thought. I still think so. And so I made out my own programs, and they were sent over the quarter size models over to Ford, but I don't think they got very far. But
forgive me, could you tell us in some detail what companies were using the Briggs design?
Well, yes, they had, there was the Dagenham body, in Briggs body in England,
really?
Dagenham,
uh-huh.
And so we did design for them, and I did a lot of work for English cars, and mostly in models that were sent over there, Austin. I've been corresponding with editor of a magazine over there that the Austin, I forget what it's called, the Spotlight,
yeah.
I think it's called.
Uh-huh.
And I've been corresponding with him for many years, and he's knows some of my work there. And then when I was with Lowy, I was sent over there to.
Dagenham is where Ford in England was. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you work on the so called Y job? Was that one of your? The Y.
No.
Ford?
I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
My boss, Ralph Roberts, went over there, and he worked over there for a while. I wanted to go, but he didn't want me to. I went on while he was over there. I fell under John Jarda.
I see.
That wasn't.
What is nice? Huh?
Wasn't quite as nice. although he was all right too. The other cars, the one of them I worked on, but not a model. I made a line drawing for, I think it was 12 scale. We usually did 12 scale in line drawings. And that was sent over to Standard. And they came out with that car.
Standard was?
The Standard. They Briggs built bodies for this, it was called the Standard. I don't know
English
what
car?
It, English car.
Oh, okay.
And there's pictures of it I have in one of my magazines.
Okay.
And I can recall Roberts came back to visit.
Mm-hmm.
See, he'd been in England working on the Standard, and he brought some of the executives back, and he introduced me to the executives. I was real proud when he said, this young chap did your line drawings that started this design.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of a tricky belt molding design.
Mm-hmm.
The fenders ran, and front fenders ran into the door. They didn't do that. That was a nice feature. This was in 1935, 34, 35. And some of the other things at Briggs, of course it was mainly Ford and Chrysler, but there was, my first job was with Studebaker, of all things.
Really?
I didn't know it, but at the time, but the program had been practically canceled, but I was working on it anyway, and it was Rockne. And
oh,
I did a,
Rockne,
yeah,
yes.
And I, in this.
Named after, of course, the famous Notre Dame football coach, Newt
Rockne. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they did build some, but not my design. This was after they'd completed production on them, I think. But this was in case they wanted to go back to a new car. Sometimes, you know, they've thought they were going to discontinue, and then they start up something else. And
now
that's
Rockne,
what they were hoping for.
The Rockne, he had been killed about this time, hadn't he?
Yeah, I don't know just when it was. Yeah, he was killed.
So that killed the car.
That might have had something to do with it. But anyway, I made my first model was a quarter-size model.
Uh-huh.
Am I running out of time?
No, you're good.
A quarter-size model that had the headlights built of a continuation of the belt molding. And they worked out. Later, Hupmobile did a similar thing.
Did they?
But this was quite unique, and it wasn't like my sample model. This was something entirely different.
Mm-hmm.
And Phil Wright, who was a great designer and illustrator, he did most of the illustrating for Briggs.
Mm-hmm.
And he made the coupe model, how the coupe would look.
Mm-hmm.
And that is at the Detroit Institute. That was the illustration that it's not in this book, but it's that's at the Institute. That's one of my exhibits there.
Right.
Then, of course, we did the thing I was probably most proud of was the Zephyr front end.
Oh, yeah.
I know I don't get credit for it, but I know that I made a model of just the front end for the Zephyr. The Zephyr was started from John Jarda's dream car that he made at Briggs. It was a full-size wooden model. Later, wooden models. They didn't do clay models there. They did full-size.
Mm-hmm.
They did clay, small clay models.
Mm-hmm.
And but it was a full-size wooden model with the doors open, the seats and everything. And
was that exhibited at one of the World's Fairs?
Yes, that was one of the important thing, yeah, yes. And later, a steel model was made of that.
Oh, I see.
It had the rear engine, and the Ford rear engine, and I think it was about 112-inch wheelbase. It wasn't a long car,
yeah.
But Ford management liked the design, liked the idea, but they didn't want the rear engine, so the front was moved ahead 10 inches.
Mm.
And then it was up to the design department to make a new front end for it. And that's where I came in.
Now, how did this come about? Do you remember talking to anyone about the assignment?
Well, the assignment was through Roberts. He,
mm-hmm.
he
chief designer.
He was the chief designer. But later, when he went to England, then it fell under John Jarda.
Oh, yes.
And John and Ralph were not the greatest pals. I mean, they're nothing against either one of them, but it's just one of those things. So when Roberts went away, Jarda had a chance to redesign this front end that was already approved. It was it was my design, and it was approved. The fenders ran into the door, and it had that prowl nose, and had the. The lights into the fender,
right.
And all this, and it was a beautiful job, I thought, and it was well liked. But Jarda had, well, when the engineers, Briggs engineers, couldn't make the hinge the door, because I guess they didn't want to spend the money for the gooseneck hinges and things like that.
Yeah.
It should have been done, but it wasn't, and they. Couldn't make the grill the way I had it. And I think I had louvers around, so Jarda started all over. They had different, and it was a year's delay.
Oh, no.
A year's delay. That thing should have come out in 35 or 36. 36, I guess it was. But then it went over to, then later, I don't know just the development, how it came about, but later Gregory, who's the chief designer at
Bob
Ford,
Gregory.
Bob Gregory, designed it. But he used some of the same parts, the same ideas, except the fender didn't go through the door, and he had a catwalk that was quite contrived.
Yes.
But it was somewhat the same as the original, with the lights and the prow nose, which came from me.
In effect, he salvaged part of your design.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it.
But you didn't have a catwalk. You had them integrated into the...
I had the catwalk proportional to the belt line that went through.
Yeah.
He had sort of a cut-up thing that...
Well, before you leave that, this is interesting. Mr. Wright had left for England to work for...
Mr. Roberts, you mean.
Mr. Roberts had left for England, and that left, unfortunately, Charda in charge at Briggs, Briggs Design. So, did he ever say to you why he didn't like your design, or did you have any conversations with him about
that? No,
he just went ahead and did it arbitrarily.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mostly in his own department. They had Morgan or some several of his own designers. See, Roberts had his own designers. He had Phil Wright, who was the greatest, and Jack Morgan, and Wexelberg, I think was his name. He worked for Custom Cars way back before that. And, then...
But Charter had his own unit.
Yeah, he had his own designers.
Working on his own accounts. Presumably one of them was the Lincoln account.
Well, I think the Lincoln... Well... Yes, you mean the dream car, which eventually, experimental ones.
Yeah,
he also did, he did a lot of work there, mostly experimental things. He did other rear engine cars too, smaller ones and so on.
Yeah, the so-called Sturkenbergs that he had done.
Yeah, that came from him.
Now, Mr. Gregory was at Ford at this time, but apparently he did not have too much input into this car later.
Until later, until after, you see, it started from Jarda,
So forgive me, I interrupted you there. So continue your narrative, if you can, if you will, to the point where you had modified it and Mr. Jarda had, or you had come up with a design and Mr. Jarda had modified it. Then what happened? Then it went to Ford?
Well, then it went to Ford, and Gregory
redid
it. In fact, in the book here, from the Detroit Art Institute, it tells about Gregory doing the car.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't mention me. I started that front end.
Well,
however, I think, at least that's my recollection.
So let's establish for all time that Bob Cotto's design of the first Lincoln Zephyr front end, which had been largely set aside by John Charda, was partially reinstituted in Gregory's redo.
Yeah, I would say that's about
of the Lincoln Zephyr.
Yeah, that's
okay. Good.
Probably the thing that I was most proud of, though, over there was two quarter size models that I made. One was for a new airflow. The airflow, you know.
Can you tell us a bit about that? Because
yeah, I will. That
project
was a Briggs design.
How'd that start?
It started with a quarter size. I'm not talking about the old airflow.
The new
but the one that was to be redesigned.
Right.
And
why did they redesign? What had happened to the
old one? Well, the old one, most stylists didn't really care. They liked the idea. I loved the idea of moving the seats ahead and the proportions were great. But the fenders, the front end, there was a lot to be desired as from a styling standpoint. From an engineering standpoint, I thought it was great.
This is the original airflow,
DeSoto and Chrysler.
Which
remember?
Was brought out, I think, in 1933, was it?
When I came there in 1933, they were building in the back, in the shop, metal jobs I think it was about 50 of them that they were going to send around to the dealers and the auto shows and things like that.
Now, and who had primary credit for that design?
That came from Chrysler. That wasn't a Briggs, or it wasn't a Briggs design in any way, shape, or form. It was done from a few, mostly engineers, I think.
At Chrysler, right.
Chrysler. Okay. So Briggs was going to do a new airflow.
Because the original had failed.
Well, it hadn't really failed, I wouldn't say. It failed from a design standpoint, a styling standpoint,
and
I think.
And
I guess it wasn't too successful. So I made a quarter size model for that, and also for the Plymouth of the same year. And Briggs made a full size wooden model with the doors open, seating in it, everything. And it was a beautiful thing, I remember it. But I never saw photographs of it. I don't know anything about the car. I certainly wish I could see one, because maybe I wouldn't think it was so great. But at the time, I did. I do remember it had fenders running, front fender running into doors, all my designs did. And
that was one of your trademarks at this point.
Well, yeah. I'm not sure that I started it, but I did it. And the back end was a little like Phil Wright's Airflow, or Pierce Arrow, what do they call that? The Pierce Arrow that he did, it was entirely new. That had a back end, something like what I did, with a little step. But the full-size models were shown to Chrysler, but I don't think they were shown to top management. At that time, they started their own, Dietrich started there, and he had his own design department, and the models didn't get any place. I doubt if they were even shown to W.O. Chrysler.
Yeah. Had Dietrich brought in LeBaron? Had they bought LeBaron by this time, Chrysler?
Briggs was affiliated with LeBaron.
Yeah, okay,
see, that was some of our work. Although I didn't do much, I did one front end for this was under Jarda, when Roberts was in England. It was a big convertible, a Model K, I guess it called. It was a big convertible, and they had a new front end. And of course, it couldn't have the fenders running in the door, but it had the high rear fender and then dubbing off.
And what line was this again?
This was in this one. It's featured in one of the SIA magazines.
Which line was it?
It was the big K job, I think they call it. The big Lincoln.
Big Lincoln K.
Yeah,
okay.
not the Zephyr. It was the old big Lincoln.
So Briggs had the regular Lincoln contract too. From Ford.
Yeah. See.
Apparently, Mr. Edsel Ford liked Jarda's some of his designs, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so. Especially that.
That Zephyr.
The
original Zephyr. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's some talk over the years. I think SIA has done this. That the original design that Charter did of that 1934 Dream Car for Lincoln, Lincoln Ford, is that its influence, that its shape influenced Ferdinand Porsche when he came to see it, and then supposedly later came over to Briggs as well, and that he went back to Europe and went back to Germany and designed the Volkswagen.
It may have been.
There is a similarity.
Yeah,
isn't there? Yeah.
It could easily be.
Some report that Porsche visited Briggs as well.
It was a very interesting car, except I didn't like the short front fenders and stuff.
Yeah.
I like to see it run in the door and stuff like that. But
yeah.
it was a dream car.
Mm, yeah. So you're established Briggs and you're doing well, in spite of the fact you have to work for Mr. Charta.
Yeah. And later, I stayed there. As I said, when I was hired by Roberts, he was only going to keep me a month just to give me a start, experience,
mm-hmm.
to know how it was done, and then later I could go maybe go someplace else. But I stayed there about 6 years. But
did you enjoy it?
Oh, it was great.
Uh-huh.
Lots of times I'd so interested in my work. I'd go back to, I don't know how it was done, but it was on the fourth floor, and I'd come back at night, and I'd be the only one there. I'd work at night. Well, then security must have just let me in, but I remember we lived just a short distance from work. I'd walk across the field, and I'd get upstairs at night and flash the light. My wife would be watching to see it. Let her know I was there. Oh, we were newlyweds.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I just got married about just after I got double my salary. And
where was Briggs located at that time?
That was on near Connors.
What street?
Was it? Oh, I forget.
And you lived close by?
Yeah, on Springle.
You enjoyed your work, obviously.
Oh, that was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, but Jarda actually let me go. It was during, I do mean Jarda, not Roberts. Because Roberts was in England at the time, and they didn't, it was sort of a depression. They had to cut down.
Was that 37?
This was in 38.
38, yeah, there was a recession in 38.
Yeah, so, but then he called me back about a month or a couple weeks later.
Really?
And wanted me back again.
Did you go?
No, I wouldn't go back after.
Mr. Jarda is something of a, several people have mentioned that he was a hard person to work with.
Yeah, he wasn't fair, I don't think. He let another person go one time. Maybe I shouldn't be saying this.
Because
you can cut this off any time, can't you? Any,
yeah.
We will
edit it out if you want.
Yeah. He let one fellow I knew, Holera, go, who was a modeler, and then later tried to get him back, and he did come back, but then they disagreed on salary. He said he hired him back again for so much, and he wouldn't honor it. And that may be true and may not. I don't know for sure, but that's the story I get from
that. It points up the fact that Mr. Charter was a difficult person.
Yeah, in that respect, I think. But
what do you think of him as a designer?
Well, from that dream car, yes, and from some things, no. But
but in that regard, the genesis of the Zephyr was.
Yeah, the body was great. I liked that body.
That front end was quite distinctive.
Yeah, it was a rounded front. It was better than the airflow.
Yeah, right. Strangely enough, the airflow, in spite of its aerodynamic characteristics, sort of flubbed that front end.
Yeah, it wasn't.
It was awfully heavy too.
Yeah, it wasn't graceful at all.
So where did you go after you left?
Well, then I went to Hudson. Started there first of the year.
Where were they located?
That was on Connors too.
Oh, yeah, down the street.
Yeah, it was near Jefferson and Connors,
right.
And they had an office design department on the second floor, the studio, and then Frank Spring had his office. He was the chief designer. He came from California, and
what year was that?
This was in I started in 38.
38.
First, and there it wasn't quite so interesting because they didn't have money to come out with a new car. It was mostly facelifts, and they used those same doors all the time I was there, and they'd been used several years before that. I think it was about 11 years they kept the same basic doors.
What were their lines at Studebaker in those years? What were some of the names of the cars you worked
where? At?
At Hudson, I'm sorry.
Hudson?
Yeah.
Well, they didn't change much. It was the doors were continued on through 11 years, and you put a new front end and a new back end, and then when the running boards were concealed and more tumble home and all they did was, because it was the economical way to do it, as put an extension on the bottom of the door and cover up the running board with a molding at the top of it to cover up the joint line. And so they'd rehash the jobs that way. But I did work on the front end. I did the front end. They call them the banana skins. That was my design. The hood coming down through, and then these things protruding through the. And later on, they made variations on the variations later on were pretty good. The front end wasn't so bad.
That design stuck.
Yeah, it was. It stayed on for quite a while. Mm-hmm. But then we did do some experimental work. And yeah, I made a model of a car that they made in metal, of a complete running. It was a little H scale.
This is model, the experimental model.
Experimental right. model, mm-hmm. completely new, nothing like Hudson at all.
Mm-hmm.
And
how did this come about? Did Mr. Spring want you to start doing some?
Yes, it was. They cars. Many manufacturers, they make experimental cars, even mm-hmm. though they can't
right.
afford to come out with a new car right then, but mm-hmm. they might in case they
uh-huh. did.
So this was made just from my H-scale model.
Uh-huh.
Complete running car. Well, it was a fastback.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite streamlined. It was fenders running, front fender running through the door, as mm-hmm. it always did.
Uh-huh.
And it was very modern, advanced looking for time. Mm-hmm. It was a really nice looking car, I thought.
What sort of comment do you get from the design?
Well, it was well liked, I think, but they couldn't afford to come out with them. One. And then the... Then
did you have any pictures of that? Did you save any
no,
pictures of that?
No. I had one picture of the H-scale model that I was working at that one of the executives took a picture of me modeling
uh-huh.
this car. And that's the only picture I've got of that.
You still have that?
But I have other pictures of models that I made.
Uh-huh. Can you describe them?
Yeah, there was one that that I did along with, I work sometimes on my own at home.
Oh, sure.
And I worked with a fellow by the name of Mac Tornquist, who was a very good artist.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to make a program for Hudson and show it to the top management, which we did. Mm-hmm. We made this model. And I have a lot of photographs of that, which is
that?
Quite nice. It had a, it wasn't a fastback. It had a slightly broken back.
Mm-hmm.
And it, of course, it had the fenders running through and the door.
Mm-hmm.
It had a quite a sloping windshield and of course wrap around and it was an all new nice looking car. And
great.
We thought it would be something that they, but of course they couldn't come out with a new car anyway. So the war came along and
excuse me, Mr. Cotto, can I ask you a question at this point? Do you remember a fellow employee at Hudson in 3940 called Betty Thatcher?
Yeah,
could
yeah.
you tell us a bit about Betty Thatcher? Do you remember? She must have been one of the earliest female designers.
Yeah, I don't
She apparently came out of the Cleveland Institute of Design.
Yeah.
And was hired by
I think she probably worked more on interiors and
interiors.
Stuff like that. I don't think she... didn't she marry Joe Ars?
She married Joe Ars, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
She must have been one of the earliest female,
yeah.
Full-time
yeah.
female employees of design
yeah.
department.
Loewy had one or two.
Yeah, that's right. We'll talk about them later.
Yeah.
Good, okay. But you think she largely worked on interiors?
Yeah.
Fabrics and colors and so forth?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, good. Thank you. So there you are. At Hudson, there's not much money. Even though you're doing some experimental material and
yeah. And during the war, all the styling department disappeared, of course,
mm-hmm.
Except for 1 hour a day for me.
Really?
I worked on the B-26 bomber.
Did you?
The layout man, because I wasn't a draftsman, but I could do. Because it was new to them, new to the experienced draftsman,
uh-huh.
And so I could fill in just as well as they could. So
that was one of the war contracts.
So I was a layout man. Uh-huh. Wasn't a detailer. I was a job as a layout man during the war. But 1 hour from 4 until 5, I would work on styling. Uh-huh. And there I would work on each scale model. And it started out, they call it number A, and then it was shown to Spring and some of the executives, and uh-huh. they'd make suggestions. Uh-huh. And then, so I was to make those suggestions. Uh-huh. And that was B, and that was shown. And then they made further suggestions. And I was more or less just a modeler, doing what they told me to do. Uh-huh. And finally, we came to about, I don't know, ST or W or whatever, one of the many after the first one, but they kept the first one. Mm-hmm. And Frank Spring says, I don't think this W or whatever it was is as good as A.
Hey. So you go back to that.
But then I got my job at Lowy's.
Well, now, did you work at Studebaker all during the war?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, you mean at Hudson?
I mean Hudson's, I'm sure.
Not all during the war, because the war was still on when I went to with Lowy.
How did that
Studebaker
come? Presumably Studebaker was thinking of the post-war years, and they were starting to set up a design department. How did your contact come about there?
Well, I also, getting back to Hudson again.
Oh, yes.
I also worked with a fellow by the name of Ted Peach.
P-E-A-C-H?
I think I got him. I don't know how you spell it. But anyway, we did, he made some beautiful renderings of a model. Variations of a model. In fact, they had two models. They were small ones. I think they were 10th scale. And they were our samples. See, this was during the war, and we wanted to get a job with as a consultant for Nash or somebody. We took these samples around. Well, not very many places, but to Nash primarily. Mm-hmm. And I'm jumping around a lot.
That's all right.
And
was this during the war?
This is during the war.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we were hoping to get a job as a consultant, along with our war work.
Sure.
We had to do our war work, but we'd do the, at night, we would do whatever we could.
Mm-hmm.
So I almost got a job with Nash, or we did.
Mm-hmm.
Wahlberg, his name was. He was the vice president, I think, at the time.
Nash.
Mm-hmm. He was a chief engineer.
W-A-H-L-B-E-R-G.
Yeah. In fact, he was the one that recommended that I go to Cornell, which I did. I went to Cornell University for 3.5 years and took engineering and architecture. Neither one of them was the right thing.
This was back
thing.
In the 30s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in the 20s.
20s?
Well,
and Nash all that time?
No. I mean my education.
Yeah, right.
Cornell.
Yeah.
See, I had talked to him long time ago, but then this 10 years later or whatever,
mm-hmm.
I went back to him with these samples.
Mm-hmm.
And later he told me that he almost hired Cotto and Peach. But instead he hired Walker.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
For Nash.
Walker worked for Nash for a while.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Joe Orris and Elwood Engel worked, I think.
They started.
Maybe they didn't work in Kenosha, but they had the contract.
Yeah, right.
And so
that was a near miss, huh?
Yeah, it was a near miss.
Yeah.
And
did Cotto and Peach stay together?
Yes, we had our own stationery, and we had Ted did make a few contacts, but it was his own because I wasn't. It was a industrial something or other. I don't remember just what it was. But as far as the automobile part, we didn't get any place with it, except that he did. It helped us in a way. that it helped me get my job with Lowy, because I was on a vacation or something, but Ted was interviewed by Lowy's spokesman, Barnhard, and he had the photographs, I think. I don't think he had the actual models, but the photographs of the models and his own illustrations. So that was the start of my going to Lowy, because I was to call through Peach's interview.
Uh-huh.
I was to call Lowy's office.
In New York?
In New York,
mm-hmm.
which I did on a payphone,
mm-hmm.
and in Detroit. And I was hired over the phone.
Oh, wow. By whom? By Mr. Barnhard?
By Barnhard.
Uh-huh. Barnhardt?
I think so.
Yes.
Yeah.
On the basis of the...
on the basis of
this,
sketches and the photographs of the model.
Now, I take it that Cotto and Peach had drawn, gotten up a series of models and photographs of them, sort of a portfolio.
Yeah, a portfolio, yeah. Right.
Was Peach the modeler in your firm?
No, you? Peach, I did the models.
You were the model.
Model and design.
And you and Peach was, what was his discipline?
He worked for Hudson.
Oh, yeah.
And then later he worked for, he retired from Nash.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked at Lowy's for a while, but
this time.
They hired me first.
Now, you had picked up the modeling expertise along the way, had you?
Yeah. Oh, incidentally, there was one thing about the modeling that I might mention about. I wasn't a modeler in the sense that most modelers are. I was just interested in my own design and getting it out as quick as I could and easy and... And so sometimes I took shortcuts. I might have used a bigger tool or a bigger scraper or something than the regular modelers. And my boss, Ralph Roberts, one time said that I took the mystery out of modeling. And that always amazed me, although not to belittle any modelers. They were great, I'm sure. But
you had picked this up on your own.
Yeah, I picked up a lot
while
of.
While you were at.
Although Briggs. I learned a lot too.
Did you?
At the time at Briggs,
mm-hmm.
They never made full size clay models.
Right.
But we made a lot of quarter size and eight scale and even smaller scale. But we didn't have ovens to heat the clay. In the wintertime, we'd heat them over the radiators.
Really?
And in the summertime, we'd have warm water and put the clay in warm water and wring it out. Anyway, getting back to Lowy, we're starting with Lowy now.
Yeah, so Mr. Barnhart hired you over the phone. Did he say what you were going to do?
Yeah, it was one of the, they just started their big department that
mm-hmm.
time. Lowy had a contract to design, hire, it must have been about five or six of them. John Reinhart was one, Jack
mm-hmm.
Aldridge another,
mm-hmm.
and...
Remember some of the others?
Of course, Exner had been there. Exner and Burke had been there.
Exner and Burke?
Yeah.
Is that Bob
Burke?
Burke,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
Bob Burke.
B-O-U-R-K-E?
B-O-U-R-K-E.
Right. Uh-huh.
Yeah, he had been with Exner
for
some time.
They had a design department,
Mm-hmm. But then Lowy, actually Lowy had the contract. They were working for Lowy too at that time. But not in a big capacity. It was just the two. There was one other fellow. Dick Cleo was with him too.
Was he? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, let's see, where am I?
The contract.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Lowy was able to get a big contract. And hire quite a few men and have a big studio and all that.
This was
and that was
anticipating the post-war need
yeah,
for a car.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that's
44?
Yeah.
44?
Started in, 43.
43, 44.
I started in, August 1933. Oh, wait a minute. No, that's... It was in August. August 42.
Oh, that early? Okay.
August 42. And I stayed there until August 55. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he had this big contract, and Gordon Burig was hired as the boss.
Oh.
We didn't know that at the time because Exner was there, and mm-hmm. we sort of thought he was the boss, but later a memo came around that Gordon was the boss and Exner was his assistant.
Mm.
And anyway, we were all to make models again. That was my long suit. I liked that mm-hmm. part of it.
Right.
And we made models, but no full-size ones at that time, although before we started, Lowy and Exner had a full-size clay model. That was a clay one.
Oh.
It was the green clay, soft clay uh-huh. model.
Now, but in these years, you had trouble with heat. You had no large-scale heating.
This was at we did at Lowy's. Later on, they got an oven.
Did they? But the green clay was softer.
Yeah, that was easier to model. And anyway, we made quarter-size models, and they were cast, but we didn't have our own shop. They hired people from Chicago to come in on the train in every day and out every day.
In South Bend?
In South Bend. Mm-hmm. See, it was just the community
train.
You
mean metal fabricators? Or?
No, they'd make plaster casts. Of our quarter size model. Although that isn't so difficult. Actually, later on they did it themselves.
Mm-hmm.
John Bird was one of the modelers.
Bird.
He later became.
BIRD?
BIRD, yeah. Right. Later he became executive at General Motors.
Oh, really?
in charge of all modeling.
Oh, that's interesting. He was one of your modelers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Modeler and fabrication of
molds.
Yeah.
So what are you doing at this point? You're
well, I'm making models, and then this is about the time that you've probably heard this story about Lowy firing Exner.
Tell us a bit about that. It's kind of a shadowy episode. Yeah.
Well, we were all working on this for this 47, all new Studebaker.
This is about 1945 or
46? Yeah, 40, oh, it was before that, it would be 43, 44.
Okay.
See, before the 47.
Right.
And they're usually three years
ahead.
And we were all making these models, and here, in the meantime, Exner and Roy Cole, who was the he was vice president in charge of engineering.
How do you spell his last name?
Cole, C-O-L-E.
Right.
He never quite approved of all of this Lowy bit. And he thought that he and Exner and a few modelers could do the job, which
right.
they probably could. But anyway, he and Exner did a model quarter size model in Exner's basement.
Really?
Unbeknown to Lowy or anybody.
Mm-hmm.
There was one fellow. I think there's two fellows.
Mm-hmm.
One fellow was a modeler at Lowy's. He was also with Exner before Lowy got his big contract. And he did the modeling for Exner for this car, which was later a full-size wooden model, was made in Philadelphia can't remember where it was made, but it was in Philadelphia, and then brought to the showroom at Studebaker and shown to the top executives, and of course they went for a full-size model. It's all there and all ready to go, and we Lowy just had the quarter-size models.
Well, what was the reasoning behind this? Was Mr. Nash changing his mind about...
Nash? This is Studebaker.
Were the people at Studebaker changing their mind about the Lowy contract?
Well, not necessarily, but see, Roy Cole did this on his own, unbeknown to Lowy. He didn't go through Lowy at all. He just went to Exner, and Exner was sort of on the spot. I suppose if he was real loyal to Lowy, he would have said, well, no, I can't do this. I'm working for Lowy, but I can understand his point, too. And so he worked for Cole on this car that became the 47
Studebaker. It's your feeling that Exner had to go along with this, that he really wasn't...
I don't say he had to, but he did anyway. Uh-huh. And, of course, Exner, or Lowy, was very disturbed about that. And
had he found out about it before it came
from Philadelphia? No, not before it came from Philadelphia to the showroom.
Uh-huh.
No.
That's interesting.
And so he... he fired Exner.
He did?
Right there and then. But later, according to Exner, Exner told me that Lowy wanted him back. He felt that he probably stepped out of bounds and a little too much, got a little too...
But Exner never went back, did he?
No.
Yeah.
No. In the meantime, Cole hired him then. He was on the Studebaker payroll from then on, not on the Lowy payroll. See, we were all... All of us were on Lowy payroll. We got our
separate contract.
Yeah. In fact, Lowy wanted to make it very clear that we worked for Lowy, not for Studebaker.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, when we first hired, he took us to New York to show us around, and we had a grand time just making an impression that we working for Lowy, mm-hmm. not Studebaker.
Obviously, you moved your family to
South Bend. Yes.
Lived there for a number of years.
Yeah, all those years.
Well, so the design that Exner did become the 47
Studebaker.
How did that come about? Did Mr. Lowy realize that he had a good model here and he would go ahead and use it? Or?
You see, this car that Exner did
mm-hmm.
was shown to the top executives,
right.
And they bought it right there and then.
They bought it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So and Lowy didn't have a thing to say about it. However, later he did. We did front ends for it. Actually, the front ends, both the Champion and the Commander. See, there was two models.
Mm-hmm.
The Commander was just a longer hood, the conventional way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And the Champion with a shorter hood.
Mm-hmm.
And Lowy's... those are from Lowy. From our studio,
uh-huh.
Lowy Studio.
Uh-huh.
A fellow by the name of Vince Gardner did the front end pretty much for the Champion. And, I don't know. I guess Burke, myself, we all had a little bit to do with it. Yeah, Bob Burke stayed with Lowy.
Oh, he did. Okay.
Oh, yeah, see.
Yeah.
That's how Bob Burke later became the chief. The manager and chief. Well, I was the chief designer at the end, but at the beginning, it was Burke became. Well, at the very beginning, when Exner lost his job with Lowy, Gordon Burig was the assistant.
Uh-huh.
But Gordon Burig was not in good graces with Lowy. I think we better change these things around.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
What had happened to he and Lowy?
Well, they had a. They. I don't. Let's see, how can I say this?
They had a difference of opinion on.
Yes. And.
Burig.
Yes, quite so. Mm-hmm. Although he. His models weren't the greatest, between you and me.
Sure.
They, one of them, there's dubbed the lost chord. it didn't really go over so good. Although Gordon's done some great things, as you know, the chord and some of his Duesenbergs.
But
that was way back.
Yeah, right.
And somehow his designs weren't compatible.
They always seem to echo those years with Duesenberg and chord.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somehow. So he got some wealthy men interested in a custom special car that he did, and it was he made a model of it, a beautiful model. Well, it wasn't beautiful as far as styling is concerned, but workmanship and all. And they built a car. What was it called? It was photographed a lot. It was a cycle fenders.
Really?
It was fenders turned with a wheel. It was sort of an airplane type fuselage, and so it wasn't anything Lowy would be interested in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But these wealthy men did invest a lot of money, and they built this car.
Uh-huh.
But anyway. He was busy doing that, and he was on his way out then.
Right.
So Burke became the manager of the Lowy unit.
Mm-hmm. And you were the chief designer?
Not at that time, no. Yeah. No. Uh-huh. No, it was quite a while afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
We were in different locations. The first location was at the in one of the Studebaker buildings. It was for a gymnasium, or athletic place,
right.
And we were there for a while, and then over in the Sherman Schaus building on the second floor, we had that building, or that floor.
How do you spell that last word?
Sherman Schaus, I don't know.
S-C-H-O-U-S.
Later, one of them became involved with Avanti. But anyway, we were there for a while, and then during that time, there's an interesting development there that we had. We built full-size models,
mm-hmm.
full-size clay models,
mm-hmm.
and the Studebaker that they came out with in '47 was more expensive than they had expected. I think it was around $1,200-$1,300,
mm-hmm.
and the management thought that was too much. They should get into a small car,
mm-hmm.
and so it was decided they were going to build a small car, or show one anyway,
mm-hmm.
and so it was our job to build a small car. It wasn't a lot smaller, and it was narrower, and so as a result it didn't save them a lot of money. But we went through this whole development of full-size plaster models. Burke made two of them from full-size clay models.
Mm-hmm.
He made two of them. And I had a quarter-size model that Lowy liked, and we were going to have that as a third one if we could get somebody to do it. But he was busy with it took all the all the men to work on those two models, but he gave me a couple men to do this car if I could do it. And I had a layout man to make a complete layout, the sections and all the development, body development in quarter scale, and then enlarged to full scale of my model. And but we didn't have facilities to make a full-scale model out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did, I don't think it's ever been done before. At least I've never heard of it or seen it. We had, we made these sections, all the sections, every 10 inches, a section,
mm-hmm.
made on plaster, reinforced plaster.
Mm-hmm.
And they were set up on a frame, all just like ribs all the way through, and then chicken wire put in between these ribs,
mm-hmm.
and we made a full-scale model.
Wow.
And it was a see-through model.
Mm.
We cut the windows out, the
the chicken wire didn't go where the windows were, but every place else, chicken wire and then plaster in between.
Wow.
And it was, I got some little photographs of that showing how that was done. But that was an unusual way of building a car. But it came out all right. But then the sad thing, Cole saw it and he liked it, and it was well liked, but the whole thing was too wide. He said, "We gotta, if you want to show it, we gotta have it 2 inches narrower." Mm. So what do? Cut 2 inches out of the middle, right down, saw it right down through the whole, all these ribs and everything, and pull it together, and made it 2 inches, and then it was shown to top management. Mm-hmm. And they liked that model the best.
They did.
It was, and that was to be it, if they decided to build it, but they didn't decide to build it. So that was a near miss for me.
You had the first post-war a small car, huh?
Yeah.
What decided them not to do it?
They didn't save enough money.
Well, they
didn't. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't. I did have some things I thought would be asset. Like there was interchangeability between the coupe and the sedan, mm-hmm. and they had the same roof, mm-hmm. and but still wasn't enough, or maybe it wasn't understood. I don't know. On one side of the model was the coupe, and on the other side of the model was the sedan.
Who was running Studebaker in these days? Do you remember the top management?
I should know.